Save the rebellion! Save the dream!
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Narrative First Podcast, the weekly podcast where story is always king. I am your host, Jim Hull, the voice of Narrative First, and this is episode number 24, How to Analyze a Narrative with Dramatica. Welcome back, everyone. Hope you had a great week. For us, it was pretty uneventful here, just catching up with our Ex Machina analysis from last week. It was incorrect, the one that we had posted on Tuesday, and we finally got a chance to fix it up and put down the right story form. So if you want to go check that out, you can see narrativefirst.com/analysis/Ex Machina, and I believe we're already in follow-up, so I guess we're going ahead with everything. In between multiple viewings of the Rogue One trailer, which I've seen about 83 times now, you know.
Save the rebellion! Save the dream!
In fact, you know what? I think I'm going to make everybody listen to it right now. It's time for viewing number 84.
Jim, whatever I do it to protect you. So you understand?
I understand.
Get out of here.
Our rebellion is all that remains to push back the Empire.
You think you might be able to help us?
When was the last time you were in contact with your father?
What is this?
It appears he is critical to the development of a super weapon.
If my father built this thing, we need to find him.
All right. How many do I need?
They are requesting a call sign.
It's, Rogue. Rogue One.
The power that we are dealing with here is immeasurable.
If the Empire has this kind of power, what chance do we have?
We have hope. Rebellions are built on hope.
Take hold of this moment. The Force is strong.
Make 10 men feel like 100.
We'll take the next chance. And the next. You're all rebels, aren't you?
Save the rebellion! Save the dream!
Oh, that's so great. So great. I guess come December, we'll see if that's a great story in the end. Getting back to Narrative First and Dramatica, a couple follow-up items on the blog over the last week. One was the fractal nature of the theory, which I guess Melanie is starting to blog once again at storymind.com. And as with everything, I'll have links in the show notes. But she was speaking about a couple different things. The first one is how the difference between how the story form looks to an individual story mind and then also how it looks in terms of a group mind. You know, if you look at the four levels of Dramatica, the four levels on the table of story elements chart, you know, if you look at it from the point of view of a single mind, you would see from the bottom up motivations, then evaluations, then methodologies, and then purposes at the top. So that's if you're looking at the model of Dramatica as a single mind. But if you look at it as a group mind, you know, if you're doing either real world Dramatica, you would look at it from the point of view of characters, theme, plot, and genre. So it's like it's the same thing, just seen from two different contexts, depending on if you're looking at it as a single mind or as a group mind. I thought that was really fascinating. Really, really cool. Almost as cool as having great actors in a Star Wars movie, which is really odd, but at least makes it seem more real somehow. Another thing Melanie hit upon was dramatic tension, which is a really simple idea that she put forth, that dramatic tension is the point between the main character resolve and the story goal. So it's a back and forth between the increasing pressure to change a deeply held conviction and then the quest to achieve a goal. So that increasing pressure to change a deeply held conviction, that's the main character's resolve and the relationship story that they build up with the influence character, you know. So the main character sees the world one way, and the influence character comes in and sees the world a different way, whether or not they're conscious of it or not, and they impact or influence the main character and put pressure on them to, you know, challenge a deeply held conviction, something that they believe in. Like, maybe they believe in rebellion or hope, and they have to change everybody else around them. Maybe? We'll see. So you have that, and then you also have the quest to achieve a goal, which is where the protagonist and the overall story sit. Sometimes the protagonist and main character are the same player. A lot of times they're not. I assume in Rogue One they're probably one and the same. Usually that's the easier way to go. But that pressure between going after that goal and then the pressure to change, you know, something that you believe in for a main character is, you know, where the tension of a story is, especially if the main character is the protagonist. And then it was also interesting, too, you get in the habit of doing things the same way, and the story form happens all at once, you know, and theoretically it's just there, just boom, whole story form. But, you know, it's a story, so you have to lay it out in a linear fashion, tell it, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, all that stuff. The tendency and the way that it usually works is they get to the leap of faith moment, that culmination moment, and the main character has to, you know, either remain steadfast or change, and depending on what their choice is, that determines whether or not the overall story ends in success or failure. And that's because that's how it mostly is written, at least, you know, the current trend. Films like Star Wars and Matrix, you know, when Luke turns off his targeting computer and trusts in something else, that's how they're able to fight the Empire, actually defeat them for once. And same with the Matrix, once Neo starts believing in himself, he's beginning to believe, then they're able to take down the Matrix. That's usually how it's done, and it just makes the most sense, because it's just what we're used to, I guess. But it can also go the other way around, where it's the nature of the resolve is determined by the story's outcome. You know, so it's like the outcome happens, and because of the outcome, that's why the main character changes their resolve. You know, an example would be E.T. You know, it's not because Elliot changes that E.T.'s able to escape. No, it's like he escapes, and then that brings about Elliot's change. And that would be an example of when, you know, the story's outcome works upon the nature of the main character's resolve. So I thought that was fairly interesting. And then I finally got to put together, you know, to wrap it up, I promise probably after this week we'll be done with Ex Machina, but I finally put together the users group video analysis of the movie from last Tuesday night. Before, at least for the last 2.5 years, I think it's 3.5 years, we've been broadcasting live with Google Hangout, and now we're slowly moving to a different system. So until we do that, there won't be the live streaming and the participation online, which we will get fixed eventually. But for right now, I am just recording myself on the iPhone. So the quality actually is 5,000 times better. And I put together the entire class and did some editing back and forth so you can cut between, you know, Chris's analysis and his monitor so you can actually follow along with him. And I think it turned out pretty well. So there will be a link into the show notes for the YouTube video for that class. And then next month is Spotlight, which will be the last one of the year. In December, we actually create a story, which is really fun. We just spin a random story and then actually flesh it all out and make it all happen, which is, you know, a great way to learn Dramatica and also to see how, you know, you can just start out with a basic story form and within a couple hours or so actually have a full-blown story that you actually want to write. It's a really fun class. But next month is Spotlight, and that'll do it for follow-up. Before I get into how to analyze a narrative with Dramatica, I want to talk briefly about the article this week. One of my clients had asked, you know, it's interesting the examples that you had for the different scene illustrations, you know, the four modalities of scene illustration, which are TCAD, PRCO, SRCA, and PASS. But that fourth modality, PASS, which is passive, actual, structural, and storytelling. Those combined together determine how the author intends to illustrate the scene. I had a client who had asked me, you know, in an article that I'd written before, said it was very interesting the different examples I had, but they were from all different stories. So how would that actually work within the same story? And so I figured, because I've been working so heavily with Ex Machina and it's such a perfectly balanced film, I thought, well, this would be the perfect one to run through the past part of scene construction, see how it turns out. So it came out really well. I actually think it was a very interesting article. The first scene that I picked was for active structural. So the difference between structural and storytelling is a structural scene will actually communicate part of the story form. And in this article, I show you what an actual story form looks like. It's about 75 different story points, and it's a holistic representation of the author's intent, the author's meaning, what they're trying to say. And the story form holds everything perfectly in balance. So, you know, if you're arguing one part of an argument, one side, it says, well, if you're going to talk about that, then on the other side, you need to talk about this other part. And then that way, it doesn't feel like you're leaving things out. It's not like this one-sided argument that you're trying to get across. You actually present a really balanced argument, but you're still actually proving something that you believe or what you're trying to say. And that's essentially what a story form is. So a structural scene will actually have in it bits of that story form. It's like communicating the message to the audience. And you'll see that in terms of character, plot, theme, and genre. Okay, so that's structural. Storytelling is essentially it's impacting or influencing the audience's sense of a situation, an activity, a fixed attitude or a mental state, and then a mentality or a way of thinking. So it's actually impacting the audience's sense of things. And the idea is that you have a balance between the two, because that's what you have in real life. You have a balance between structure and experience, or structure and entertainment, if you want to keep it strictly about film. You don't want to do 100% structure, because that's extremely boring and not like real life, and you don't want to do 100% entertainment, because then you get films that are completely ridiculous and you could care less about after you've seen them. You want to have both. So that's why we have structural and storytelling scenes. The difference between active and passive is an active puts those elements into motion, and a passive is an instant of it. And that can be kind of confusing at first, because it's like, well, what's the difference between an active scene and a passive scene? Well, if you think of the signposts and journeys in Dramatica, in that story form, if you're familiar with that, you'll know that the plot progression of a through line can be looked at either in terms of signposts or in terms of journeys. And the difference is the signposts are the particular instances of that story point. It's just like a static representation of it. The journeys are the journey or the motion through two different points. And the idea is that both exist at the same time simultaneously. You know, it's like when you look at light in the real world, in our universe, light can be expressed as either a particle or a waveform. It just depends, binary or analog. And the same thing exists in the story form. Like I said before, the story form is just, it's just a thing that's there. It has space and time all wrapped into it. It has particle and waveform all wrapped into it at once. It just depends on how you're looking at it. The difference between an active scene and a partial scene, the difference between an actual and a passive scene is this difference between state and process. You know, it's also, if you look at the character resolve, the main character resolve and the main character growth, those are the particle and waveform of character arc. You know, the resolve is the state, how they are at the beginning compared to how they are at the end. And then the growth is that journey that they take to get to that place. You know, that's the waveform. So in Dramatica, you always have both particle and waveform at every level, at every story point, and you also have it in every scene, every way of describing a scene or illustrating a scene. So you break down those four and you get an active structural scene, an active structural scene, a passive structural scene, an active storytelling, and a passive storytelling. And I found four examples, one for each, in Ex Machina. The active structural, which is the one that took the most brain power, I guess, would be the scene when Ava cuts the power, right? And she tells Caleb not to trust Nathan. And that communicates character, plot, theme, and genre, and progresses the narrative. It's actually in motion. With plot, you have the story driver of action. Okay, so her delivering that message forces Caleb to decide whether or not to trust Nathan. So it's an action that forces a decision. That's the plot aspect of it. The dramatic tension that's in there, you know, it's a very dramatic moment. Feels very heavy, very sinister. That is the genre part of the story form. Yeah, when Dramatica looks at genre, it's different than what most people think of, where they think of like romantic comedy or sci-fi adventure. For Dramatica, you're talking about the purpose of the element that you're communicating. And as with everything, it's four. So there's entertainment, comedy, drama, and information. And so this is that moment when everything goes out and all that stuff. That's a very, that's a drama moment. That's that genre beat is communicating drama. So we have plot and genre, and so for theme, you have both. You have the relationship story issue of interpretation and the relationship story catalyst of senses. You know, the power cut shuts down and alters sight and sound, so that's where the senses in the relationship story, that's the catalyst that kind of furthers their relationship forward, while also giving an opportunity for Caleb to completely misinterpret, you know, what Ava's trying to do. He thinks, you know, she's trying to be on his side because she likes him, and she's really just using him to further her own personal agenda. So that would be an example of an active structural scene. It communicates parts of the story form, and it furthers the narrative. It actually puts it into motion. Now, a passive structural scene, you know, it's like, how can something communicate the story form without moving it forward? And again, it's that same idea, the particle and the waveform. So when looking at a passive structural scene for Ex Machina, you want to look at the scene when Caleb is awoken by Kyoko, and he wakes up stunned because there's this beautiful woman in his room, has no idea what's going on. And so he heads into the living room or living space where Nathan is, of course, working out, because that's what you do when you're a tech billionaire off in the mountains of Norway and you have nothing else to do. You just continue getting yourself ripped. Helps you code better. So this scene is a passive structural scene, and that's because it communicates the story form of Ex Machina, but it doesn't put the story into motion. It's a very static instance of it. It's kind of like a snapshot of it. It's like, here's the story form. And it communicates character, plot, theme, and genre. It does it in a different order, because obviously you can go in any kind of order you want. But it first communicates plot, with Caleb entering and Nathan asking him, what's the plan? You know, well, what are we going to do? What's the next part? And Caleb is, you know, he's questioning the examination format, and he brings up the idea that it's like playing chess against a computer. It's in a closed loop. You know, he has an idea of the kind of Turing test that he now wants him to perform. So that's the plot, which is the overall story goal of conceptualizing or developing a plan. And then genre is when he gets in, when they both get into the discussion over simulation versus actual. And, you know, if you don't know what a Turing test is and you're not really sure the differences between different ways that you can run the test, this would be an instance of information. So remember in the last scene, it was drama. And here, the genre that's being communicated is information, because it's telling you about different kinds of Turing tests that can be performed, simulation versus actual. So that'd be the next beat. And then after they go through that, then Nathan brings up some theme. You know, he brings up the overall story circumstances from the day before, which is a previous scene, which is kind of similar in the fact that it's also a passive structural scene. You know, he said, well, yesterday I asked you, you know, how does she feel about you? Okay, so that's bringing up that overall story issue of circumstances. And it could also be a little bit of the relationship story issue of interpretation. I mean, these aren't just cut and dried things. I mean, they're both in there, but predominantly the overall story issue of circumstances. That's the theme part of the story form that this scene communicates. But then it ends on this really perfect part. It like takes that theme and then moves into the character level of the story mind or the story form that it's trying to communicate. And that's when Nathan goes, you know, the question is, you know, how does she feel about you? And that hits Caleb's main character symptom of desire, where, you know, just personally, he's like, well, how does this robot slash woman feel about me? You know, that's where he feels like his problem is, the main character symptom. So in this scene, you have character, plot, theme, and genre. They're not pushing the story into motion. It's not like moving from one point to another, but it's just giving you a snapshot or a brief little glimpse of the story form in that one scene. So with passive structural and active structural done, we move on to the storytelling scene. Now, these are usually the easiest to identify, because you could necessarily, you could take them out, and the story would mean the same thing. Now, I'm saying it would mean the same thing. It certainly wouldn't feel the same way. When you remove the experience, the flavor or the spice from a story, you get a very bland story. So it's not like you'd want to remove these. It's not like these are deficient scenes. They're just storytelling scenes. They're not actually communicating anything. They impact or influence the audience's situation, activity, fixed attitude, mentality, or manner of thinking. So in Ex Machina, an example of an active storytelling scene is the opening sequence where Caleb takes the helicopter ride to Nathan's compound. And it impacts and influences the audience's situation, activity, state of mind, and manner of thinking in four different beats, but all wrapped up into that one scene of the helicopter flying there. You know, it starts out, it's taking the audience into a new world. We're seeing stuff most of us never get to see in real life. It's beautiful photography. It's taking them to a new place. It's creating a state of wonder. That's the state of mind there within the audience. You know, we share Caleb's perspective. So as he's looking out, it's like, wow, this is beautiful. So we have that state of mind, that feeling of overwhelming, like, oh, this is beautiful. And then what's really cool is the mentality or the manner of thinking is when, you know, Caleb's like, well, when do we actually fly over? You know, when do we get to Nathan's compound? And the helicopter pilot just smiles and says, you know, well, we've been flying over for 2 hours. That's the psychological twist there that impacts the audience's manner of thinking, where they're like, oh, whoa, this guy is insanely rich. This guy is amazing. I've never even heard of anybody in the real world that's like this. And then finally, you know, the helicopter landing and dropping him off says, you know, I'll see you in a week. That's the activity there, because now it's like, all right, I'm on a new adventure. I'm in this new world. Let's go see what we can find. So that would be an example of an active storytelling scene. So it isn't communicating any part of the structure, but it is impacting or influencing the audiences the way that they see things. And it gives flavor, it gives color to the story itself. And then finally, we have the passive storytelling scene, which when I went into this article this week, I was like, well, this is the easiest one to point out because it's usually the most memorable one for anybody who has seen the film. And that would be, you know, well, apparently, being born with the innate skills to build a multi-billion dollar tech company and create the world's first fully functional and convincing artificial intelligence also makes you one hell of a great disco dancer. So there's this one scene where Nathan comes in and he catches Caleb with Kyoko, and then he ends up dancing. And it's great. Some really fantastic dancing because, you know, obviously all that working out and getting ripped makes you a fantastic dancer, which I guess also makes you a great coder. But again, this scene does a great job of balancing those four things that an audience needs to be influenced or impacted to make the scene feel complete. It feels complete because it hits situation, activity, state of mind, and manner of thinking in four different beats. You know, the first situation is Nathan walking in and catching Caleb, you know, adjusting Kyoko's blouse. Right? I mean, he's caught. So it's like, well, okay, that impacts my situation. And then, you know, there's a little bit of manipulation that goes on there as he tries to get him to dance. And Kyoko tries to get him to dance. And that's not happening. You know, Caleb's not the dancing type. And then we get the activity, which is Nathan and Kyoko doing their routine, which obviously they've been practicing for a really long time. And overall, there's this sinister quality to it. The state of mind, you know, in the helicopter sequence, it was, you know, wonder and overwhelming. But in this dancing sequence, it's just this overwhelming sense of dread or this sinister, like, this Nathan guy is really, really scary. If he can dance like that, I need to really watch my back. And of course, it's also red, you know, which brings it to mind, you know, the scenes with Ava, where it's like, you can't trust this guy. So it hits all four of those points and influences the audience's sense of their situation, the sense of being manipulated, the activity, and of course, the state of mind there at the end. So all these scenes, these examples of these four scenes in Ex Machina are there to put a balance between structure and entertainment. You know, a lot of people will say story is structure or screenwriting is structure, but structure itself is not story. You know, people don't go to screenings, they don't go to plays, they don't sit down to read a novel to experience a good structure. They want to experience a good story. But effective structure is important because it carries the author's intent, the author's message, to the audience. And so the more solid the structure, the clearer the message, the clearer the story form, the greater the chance for the author to actually impact and affect an audience. But suspicions will grow within the audience if the work is just simply trying to implant a message. Audiences will feel manipulated and begin to grow wary of the entire experience because it's not like real life. Like Caleb, they want to fall in love, but after being burned so many times before by other authors and filmmakers that they put their trust in, they want to believe that there's something more than intent. They want new situations, new activities, a greater state of mind, and a challenging and welcome playground to process it all. They want a story that reflects life with all its ups and downs and chaotic interludes. And they want a life inspired and influenced by a great story. By infusing both life and story with intent and experience, the author transcends both particle and waveform to say a little something about what it means to be alive. And hopefully, there's someone out there to hear what's being said. So you may be asking yourself, what the heck does this have to do with analyzing the narrative with Dramatica? That's why I downloaded this podcast. I was really excited to get to that part. Well, I didn't want to do another podcast with Ex Machina in the title, and most people aren't going to understand passive, active, structural storytelling scenes. But there was an interesting moment at the end of the Ex Machina analysis, which I cut out of the YouTube video, where one of the people in the class asked Chris, How could they be so wrong with their initial analysis of it? And if you watch the class, you'll see that I was clearly wrong. That was what last week's podcast was all about. You know, and he's asking, well, all these people who are so experienced, how come they get off on the wrong track? And Chris had a really, really great explanation for how he goes about doing it. And it's something that I always forget. And I'd like to share that with you. So here's Chris Huntley, one of the co-creators of Dramatica, explaining how to analyze a narrative with Dramatica.
So Chris, how do we check ourselves when we go down the wrong road very early in an analysis? Because, you know, it's like,
I think most of us here,
we're like way off base on our initial things, you know? Yeah. And I'm like gathering information. Here they are, they're testing and they're trying to find.
Right.
And I go down the wrong road and it's just like, it's frustrating.
Right, it is. But you make those choices. And what happens is, as you start to get to the implied choices, they start not to be fitting.
So you gotta go back.
Yeah.
Right, you go, oh.
That's
oh, 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 no. That no, but that's the only way you can tell. You know, we have a group here. We're working out the answer before we actually make the choice. That's a luxury. You know, it's always easier if you have two people to
it
do
it.
It's
hard to do it by yourself.
It's extremely hard to do it by yourself. And so you, in lieu of doing it with another person, you just have to do it many times. I'm speaking from experience here.
I would argue that my first guesses that I wrote down the beginning, I'm about 25% right. So.
But that's why you always want to.
Because I went down the wrong road. I mean, I was just like, you know.
Right. And,
I had
and,
current situations, so I think I got right.
So the way that you figure it out is when you're answering the questions that are about the domains and the, you know, the static plot points, you have to think about, you have to come up with at least three examples from three different parts of the story. Ideally four, but three is good enough. Because if you can find there's something sort of in the beginning, and there's something in the middle, and there's something in the end, that's a good indication that it's consistent. Because you can find an example for every single one of those things in every single context. It's finding multiple examples in this of that thing in that context. That's what's almost impossible to do. And then every time you build on by adding another one of those that is consistent, it makes it that much more certain. And also you can then have to test. You really have to go through and test those other ones, which is why we go through and read the story form, because you go, what is that? I have no idea what that is. It's like, well, probably that you're off somewhere, you know, and then you can just back out and see how much you need to back out to loosen that up and see what your choices are and see, well, maybe I was not that far off, and if none of the choices look good, then you go, okay, you know. But it's, think of it as a process, not as a one-shot deal. You really do want to go through it multiple times. And it's a little different when you're creating, unless you already know what your story is and you're just trying to get it to be reflected on in Dramatica. If you're developing a story, you know, sometimes, depending on if you're a structuralist, you can use it to sort of take you in directions you wouldn't normally go. But the only problem is you have to be careful that about all the ideas that you have, they may not all fit together in one story. You know, they just, you might need to tweak it a bit, or you might just say, I'm going to go a different way, or I'm going to leave this for a different story, or the sequel, or whatever. But that is normal. I mean, I was saying it was possibly a Judgment Good story. You know, and getting all sorts of evil eyes. Which is great, that's fine. I when I come into these now, I've not given it any thought as to what a story format is. I used to come in, long time ago, basically a whole idea of what it is. But I found myself guiding the conversation to go the way I thought it would go, and I don't think that really worked well. I mean, but when I did that, I usually gave it a lot of thought ahead of time, so I spent a lot of time trying to find a story form.
Right.
This is, I think, a much better way to go. It's more organic, and again, we do it, I guess it's more the Socratic method. We go through working it out together, and you see the making mistakes, and then how to get to those right answers. You saw, we're all over the place on this.
So you have to do the story form many, many times. I always forget to do this. Always, always, always. Because I've done it so many times, I feel like I know exactly where it is. And with Ex Machina, I knew where the overall story was, and I knew where the relationship story was. And because of some audience appreciations that I had fixed in my head, I guessed where the situation or I guessed where Caleb and Ava were as far as their domains are concerned. But, you know, if I had done it multiple times and looked over the different story forms and gone into, you know, gone deeper into the story form, and then when it didn't work, come back out, I would have arrived at the same answer that we did in the class. And I really like the idea that when you're looking at the static plot points of the story form, remember we were talking about static and waveform today, when you look at the static plot points, come up with at least 3 different examples of it. That's great. If I could just remember to get 3 examples of every static plot point, maybe 4 if you can, but at least get 3, and then do it multiple times until you arrive at one that feels really, really solid, a story form that really works, I will be more successful in my analysis, and I think if you do the same, you'll be just as successful. So that's it for this week. Hope you learned a little something about how to analyze a narrative with Dramatica. And of course, you learned a little bit about the passive, active, structural, and storytelling scenes that illustrate the story form. If you have any questions about anything, write to us at narrativefirst.com/contact. If you'd like to leave a message, go to narrativefirst.com/podcast, click the microphone button, and leave your message. Hope you have a great week of writing, and we will see you next week.